Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast. I'm Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, we are only 3 days later than we promised, which on the track record of 3 months later than we promised between the last podcast and the one prior, I think is pretty good, especially considering that the reason we decided to delay is because we've got U19 tryouts to talk about, which includes the cutdown from 105 to 50 players on the roster right now. But first and foremost, you are on the road to Danbury, Connecticut for the 2019 Maverick Showtime. How's everything going, man?
Going well, man. No, I'm in the car with our guy Dan Ayburn, and just looking forward to getting up there. I think it was funny, man. We ran into the two assistant coaches from the Patriot League. Saw John Crawley and Mark Van Arsdale at Starbucks at a rest stop in New Jersey, just kind of all on the same path. And that's kind of one of the themes of the summer. We're all, seeing each other a million times and a lot of the same spots. So it's fun, but pumped to get up there, man. One of my favorite events. Been there 8 or 9 years in a row and looking forward to it.
So you and I both had an opportunity to attend sessions of the U19 tryouts, which were held at US Lacrosse this past weekend, Friday, Saturday, and a morning session on Sunday. I was there from roughly 3 to 5:30 on Saturday afternoon, in which you and I both got an opportunity to sit together and watch the team, or the 105 players broken up into four teams, and then two of the teams played two 25-minute quote-unquote games, and then two of the teams played three 25-minute games, and it was a really good opportunity to assess the talent. So starting there, how do you regard the pool overall?
I mean, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, generally, big picture, it's such a nice luxury for us to have, for so many people to have, especially in the area that it was. I mean, a lot of college coaches could stop by and watch the action. And I feel like, and I've said this a couple times before, I think in a year that still kind of figuring out the 19 class more so than ever and kind of who stacks up, I think it's very telling and just the best measuring stick possible, along with an event like Under Armour. But was really impressed. I feel like certain positions stood out more than others. So some very, always some very difficult decisions to make, cutting that list down in half, something the coaching staff did on Sunday afternoon. Evaluators gave their input, and then the coaches went in their own room and made some tough decisions on the 50 they'd bring back. But I love it. I mean, some really good lacrosse. The compete level was as high as you could possibly find in high school lacrosse. So, it was enjoyable. I think I was super impressed by a handful of the face-off guys, and certainly feel like there were some tough decisions to make at each position. But, generally just really enjoyed it, and we'll keep going here. But, I can't say enough, good things, because looking at that list, even though I only got to, two or three sessions, I can't really argue a whole lot here. I think that it's very easy to look at one session and say, oh, this kid, didn't stand out a whole lot in this particular session. But, they're looking at the big picture and, they're looking for the right pieces to fit together.
I think that's one thing that I like to begin every conversation with when it comes to a national team, which is, the group of 55 players that were cut from this round could, and in some instances have, come together to beat the team that will ultimately compete in Limerick, Ireland next year. That's not the arbiter by which these choices need to be evaluated. Ultimately, for the coach of a national team, your legacy is to win. You have to win this event. And when you're coaching the U.S. team, the stakes are way higher in the sense that if you don't win, folks are going to look at it and say, how could we not win? And so whether it's the senior team or the U19 team, I think that every coach deserves the opportunity to make choices on the basis of how he wants to play stylistically and how the player pool, both from a coachability standpoint and from a skill set standpoint, means to fit together. And so when I share observations about maybe this guy over this guy, it's from my lens, but my lens is obviously much different from Nick Meyers and his staff's lens. It's much different from John Donowski's and his staff's lens. And this is an opinion that I've held all the way back to 2010, coming away from the tryouts that Mike Pressler held, which were, you know, one of the most hinge-ish in the history of the U.S. national team, because they were coming off of the 06 World Championships, in which they had very famously lost to Canada. And so I think, again, that's kind of an important place to start. But a second big point, in my opinion, is, Ty, you and I have had this IL Preps podcast for, you know, more than a year, and I don't know how much time we've spent talking about Brennan O'Neill, but whatever the amount is, it's appropriate. Because once again, on one of the biggest, most competitive stages that you could find, he just looked like a different player. And I don't want to go too long on it in this point, but I don't think it's fair to start anywhere else than, in your opinion, was he the best player on the field? And now, what does that mean to Paul Bunyan's growing legacy?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, it's very fair to say that he was the best player in the field, and it's something that you expected. I mean, he, you know, obviously stands out right off the bat with his size, and then he just has this commanding presence. I mean, I'm sitting next to someone, they're saying, you know, yeah, you know, we talk so much about, you know, how Brennan O'Neill's this generational talent, and he is, but he hasn't made a play tonight. And then right away, he gets the ball at, you know, around the restraining line, puts a move on his guy, and scores on just a beautiful individual effort, as he's known to do, just going right through the teeth of the defense. And then, you know, I mean, that guy kind of, you know, did have to say at that point and said, well, you know, I'll eat my words here. You know, kept scoring, you know, some really pretty goals. So, yeah, I mean, he was the best player in the field in most sessions from what I've gathered and what I watched. And, you know, from my perspective, I felt like, and this kind of, you know, was in line with what we were saying about, you know, who's the best fit, you know, who can beat Canada or whoever else. And I felt like going in my mind, the two locks to make it to the next round were, you know, the main ones were O'Neill and Cole Herbert. I mean, Herbert was, you know, Baltimore Sun Player of the Year, co-player of the year with B.J. Burleys, who also made the cut. But Herbert, I mean, had, I think, 16 goals, 39 assists, and over, I mean, around 50 ground balls for Calvert Hall this year during their three-peat. And, you know, Herbert was great again. So he's someone that can play, you know, both ways and really just, you know, fits their style, fits international play, just really does it all, you know, with the way that international rules are. But those were two main ones, and certainly some other just tremendous players that caught our eye. You know, but again, I can't say enough about, you know, the job that this staff did making some tough decisions. And, you know, I'll add, I think that, you know, just to be transparent, I think there's always talk about, okay, how many Ohio State recruits will be in the mix and make that next round. And I want to say that maybe six or seven of 12 that tried out advanced. And I can't argue with a single one. They mixed it out, and certain ones more than others, but I think generally they did a really good job, you know, mixing it up and getting a variety of skill sets. Just really pleased with what we saw and the job that this staff did.
So let's just go by position by position and talk about a couple of guys that made a strong impression. And we'll start with the attack, obviously O'Neill, and I don't think we need to revisit that. One guy who made the cut that I was really impressed by was Alex Slusher, a Princeton commit from Oregon Episcopal School, who, for me, put on a decent amount of good weight since the last time I saw him and showed the two things that I think are the hallmarks of his game. The first is a really good presence as a feeder from behind. And on one particular play, I was impressed by the way that he mirrored, or Patrick Kavanaugh mirrored him along the crease. And it was a nice lefty take into a Kavanaugh right-handed one-touch finish. And then on the literal next play, off of the opposing team's faceoff win, Slusher rode the ball back. And I was just, he exceeded my expectations is probably the right way to say it. And I don't know whether he's going to make the team, but I was impressed by Slusher. Who stood out to you from the attacks side in the sessions that you were able to watch?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo, you know, your sentiments about Slusher. I think, you know, one of the storylines for me was that I was super impressed by some attackmen that, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, dropped off. over the past couple of years. But, you know, there were certainly guys like Owen Murphy and Lance Tillman that got a lot of love early. You know, Murphy, a longtime Hopkins commit, and Tillman, you know, a longtime Carolina commit, you know, before the new rules. And, you know, I did feel like there were some other attackmen that caught up to them over the past couple of years. But then I watched them, you know, over the course of the weekend, and, you know, they were just, you know, constant playmakers and, you know, showed really good hands, and a lot of poise, and didn't make, you know, as many mistakes as some other highly recruited attackmen did. And we're just, you know, super consistent in, you know, the games that we were able to watch together and individually. So, you know, I liked what they could do. And you mentioned Kavanaugh. I thought Kavanaugh was, you know, made some really special plays. I mean, he was really strong on Friday night. I think he had three or four goals, rode really hard, as you would expect a Kavanaugh to do, the younger brother of Matt Kavanaugh, of course, who played in this team a couple of years ago. So, you know, I was really impressed with those guys. And we could go on and on about a number of players. But, you know, I think those names, you know, on attack, you know, really stood out.
Yeah, I would agree. And specifically about Tillman, he would be another one that kind of opened my eyes a little bit. But I also want to double down on a point that you just made is in watching these games, I found myself making more notes about negative plays and mistakes than I typically do because there was so much high level action that it was almost making good plays wasn't the separator. It was making good plays and not making mistakes. And so to whatever degree that was an ethos that the staff applied or that the evaluators applied, I have no idea. I just couldn't help but find myself or catch myself making those choices and making those notes.
Yeah, and you have to. I think, you know, this is one of those, I mean, it's always, you know, something you want to focus on, you know, and I always speak about it in a culture that, you know, really values something like a highlight reel, you know, a highlight tape where, you know, just a player making great play after great play, and you would think that they never have flaws or make mistakes. And I think that it's so important to, you know, kind of equally balance great plays and then, you know, ones that weren't as good. And you know, with consistency and finishing strong, you know, a point of emphasis for the staff. So definitely, I think that, you know, you really have to emphasize that because you know that pretty much everyone in the field is going to make, is going to stand out and make some great plays. I didn't watch that lacrosse over the weekend and look at a kid and say, man, he just did not belong. Because, you know, that just wasn't the case. There were definitely, you know, some kids that played better than others. I think that, you know, we'll get to it, but the goalie position, I thought I was a little underwhelmed and some guys I thought were a little bit average, you know, eventually, finished really strong on Saturday and Sunday in sessions that we missed. You know, but it's definitely interesting to kind of, you know, weigh all those things, you know, equally.
So two attackmen that I just want to point out that made a strong impression on me that didn't make the cut, Eric Malver, the rising senior from Georgia heading to Maryland, and then Dylan Palinetti. Wow, that shouldn't have been as much of a tongue twister as it was. Dylan Palinetti, the rising freshman heading to Maryland from Ward Wellville, who was playing a fair amount of midfield in the session that we saw as well. Two guys I saw that made plays, but it just echoes the point, which is that there are a lot of hard decisions that need to be made. Was there anybody that didn't make the team that made a strong impression on you?
You know, I think definitely those two. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, go through my notes right now while in the car. You know, I think from attack perspective, I'm trying to, you know, go down. It really was those two. I liked what CJ Kearse could do at times as well. You know, and then, you know, you have his brother making the cut. But, I mean, it was, you know, that it's going to be very difficult to whittle the attack down. And I felt really good about it. And, you know, one more name I'll highlight is Brendan Grimes. And, you know, he was someone that, you know, of course, you know, made this cut. It's interesting because he's a former Ohio State commit. And he's now going to Hopkins and really missed all of his junior season with a back injury. And they wanted to give him some rest. He didn't try for Under Armour to prepare for this. And, you know, I think that we really saw, you know, the proper scope of Brendan Grimes and saw what he could do. I think it was refreshing to see that. He's a kid that is a lefty shooter who is really, you know, been polishing his dodging over the years, hasn't had the opportunity to do so, but, you know, until this tryout, having missed so much time. But, you know, I'm standing next to Dan Abern, who's filming the action on Friday, and, you know, he puts a move in his guy and just, you know, hammers a shot in the high corner. You know, they're like, all right, there's Grimes. You know, that's what he can do. And you saw him kind of, you know, dodging from above the cage a whole lot and working pretty well with his teammates. But, you know, all in all, I feel very good about, you know, the decisions that were made, you know, at the attack position. I think there were a number of guys that they should feel really good about. And, I mean, that's the easy part. You know, kind of whittling it down again is going to be very difficult for that staff at the attack position.
No question. So moving on to the midfield, one of the things that you really liked was, in addition to having guys that were designated as M's on the roster, each team also had two dogs, which we think stands for defense offense guys. And I thought that you noted coming away from it Friday night, and it was immediately apparent to me, Alex Wicks, the rising senior from St. Mary's Annapolis going to Maryland, was awesome. And not to say that he was necessarily the best midfielder there. You mentioned Herbert as being one of the you know, potential no-brainer locks. But for me, Wicks was kind of a revelation.
Yeah, no, and I've watched a lot of Wicks, you know, over the years, and he's not the biggest guy, but he's certainly among the toughest. You know, Pasadena, Maryland product, it's St. Mary's and off to Maryland. I mean, he just, I counted, you know, two or three hockey assists in Friday's games, and just a tremendous asset, you know, in transition and off the ground, and, you know, going really hard in scrums, getting key contested ground balls. I mean, I just loved what he could do in transition, you know, going from defense to offense. And I think he's just kind of, you know, tailor-made for a role like that, and also tailor-made for the Big Ten. So, you know, I wasn't, you know, that shocked to see him make the cut, you know, given the plays that he was making. And I also, you know, I thought that, you know, there's a couple other guys that stood out. But, you know, Wicks and Graham Bundy, you know, who I feel like is one of the best middies in the country, were, you know, really my two favorites at the dog position.
No question. Yeah, I would agree that Bundy, who made the cut as well, was really impressive. A couple other guys at the midfield who made the cut. Russell Marr is just so much fun to watch. You know, that kid has such a unique running style and such a well-honed skill set. I was really impressed by what he showed. And, you know, beyond that, a lot of really known quantities, whether they be, you know, from this area, from the Baltimore area, like Grant and Connor Mitchell or Jack Corris, or, you know, some of the kind of well-known Long Island middies as well, like Aiden Denenza, or not necessarily a Long Island middie, but Jake Caputo from North Carolina, who played with Team 91, guys that made the cut in this spot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, it's important to really touch in on, not the fact, but, you know, my feelings that relative to other classes, it's a weak class at midfield, the 2019 class, that is, not the 20s. But, you know, I feel like it's somewhat of a down year at that position. But I still feel like the number of players both ways and making plays, you know, at almost all times. I mean, Aiden Blake is one of the Under Armour All-Americans that I was really impressed with on Friday. I think, you know, a big frame, played great defense, and really just did a good job in kind of getting that. I like what Caputo could do, is, as you mentioned, you know, I think there was just a lot of versatility. I mean, Patrick Hackler, I think we should probably mention, at the dog position, but just a lot of players that really stood out, that you kind of expected to. But, you know, it's going back to earlier points, I think it's so refreshing to watch a lot of this talent, because, you know, just for pure geographical reasons and resources, you can't get to see a lot of these players, you know, in the spring. So it was a really good refresher to see a couple of them, you know, including Caputo and Aiden Blake and guys like that, kind of just going down the list. You know, Colin Riley as well at midfield, an Avon Old Farms product from Long Island off to Penn State. Just a lot of great midfielders on the field, and you know, really enjoyed watching that position. I think that was kind of the most telling, some of those performances there.
So by the same token, that there were a couple of guys who didn't make the cut at the attack spot, three guys that I want to mention who made a strong impression on me: Drew Brenfleck, Riley Gray, and Danny Parker, I thought all made some nice plays in that session that I was watching.
Yeah, I think Parker is someone that I did get to see on numerous occasions in the spring, but you know, I really like what he could do. I think you start to think about the kind of player that he is, and also look at the kind of defensive midi that Virginia has, you know, in their championship run. I think that, you know, he could be a Matt Jama, you know, of sorts, or a John Fox, just super athletic, hard nose, just a constant presence, despite not being, you know, super big. But, you know, love what he could do, and I think that, you know, I am sure he got a very hard look for a spot.
Moving on to the long pole position, I mean, we got some trees in this one for sure, but it's actually one of the guys who I would say measures a little bit shorter, who made a really strong impression on me, Quentin Matsui from Eden Prairie in Minnesota, rising senior going to Virginia. I was super impressed by him. And then along those lines, another guy who stood out, Jackson Bonnets, rising senior from McDonough in Maryland, going to Navy. I really liked his handle in the open field. Those were the two poles that I think made the strongest impression on me.
I feel really good about those players at the next level, and just hearing a lot of rumblings out of the U19s from Sunday sessions, you know, to an evaluator. He said, you know, I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen Brendan O'Neill be covered so well. And, you know, to the point, you know, I mean, in reference to Bonnets, I mean, I think I would have loved to see that session and what he was able to do. And there was, you know, in some ways I was a little surprised because I don't know if I've seen Bonnets cover O'Neill before. I'm sure he has, given how often the Crabs and 91 Crush have played each other. But, you know, definitely a big size disparity there. But Bonnets is just, I think I was texting you, you know, he's a pit bull. And that's what I said. And you know, one of the more athletic and, I mean, I would say maybe the toughest defenseman that I've seen in all my years of covering Baltimore lacrosse, you know, so extensively. Really good football player. I think he was all conference as a sophomore. Great wrestler. Got to watch him, you know, wrestle at some point, going to a match or two with my father, a former wrestling coach, and just a really impressive defenseman as well. So, you know, to hear that Bonnets fared so well on Sunday and kind of solidified his status, you know, it was not a huge shock. But, you know, love what he could do, and Matsui as well. Matsui is a kid that I can see, you know, covering Brendan O'Neill in the future in a number of ACC battles over the years. So, you know, those two names caught my eye, and I would also throw in Mikey Alexander. You know, I said to someone, I always saw what he could do, but within the Team 91 defense, they have a couple top 100 players. I mean, guys like Greg Campisi at LSM, Kenny Brower, who's the top-ranked defenseman in the class, and Frankie Siniglio and Patrick O'Neill. I mean, these are all players that I expect to be impactful at the next level. But in this setting, I thought Alexander was super impressive. He's tough as nails, move really well, great communicator. I think just a really good, like, two or three defenseman as opposed to number one. Not to say he couldn't, you know, do that as he has for West Islip over the years. But I think just a really good fit. Same with Jacob Snyder, you know, at the tryouts. I think just really good complementary pieces on defense.
Yeah, and so for me, again, moving on to the guys who made strong impressions but didn't make the cut, Ben Ware from St. Stephen St. Agnes, long stick midi, rising senior, committed to Virginia, was originally committed to Ohio State. He's one of my favorite players in that class, and I was really impressed, particularly by one sequence in which he got inverted by Xavier Arline, who, an attackman from Shoreham Wading River, heading to North Carolina, who made the cut and is well known for his quickness. And Arline exploded from X, going to his right hand. And I was really impressed by Ware, who was probably about 6'5", his ability to stay on his hands and use his speed to close and get a stick on Arline's stick to disrupt his shot. You know, for me, Ware is one of the guys coming away from the weekend that I was most impressed by.
Yeah, and I'd agree. And I think, you know, again, going back to an earlier point, you know, looking at the defense list, I felt, you know, coming out of Saturday sessions that we attended, I was like, I don't know what the heck they're going to do, because it's a really deep 2019 class on defense. And there's some very good, you know, 2020s as well, rising seniors. But I felt like it was a toss-up. But then you look at the list, you're like, all right, I feel good about this group. You know, I think that there were some players that definitely showed flashes. I thought Max Shallett, You know, I saw him struggle a little bit with O'Neal and get beat topside, but I thought he showed what he can do, and definitely, you know, a strong, flashy defenseman from Florida that I see making impact the next level. I think those were the two guys that caught my eye, you know, and then I haven't been able to highlight Sutton Boland. You know, I think he opened my eyes as well. I mean, I think we had him ranked number 55 or so in the last class. On last rankings, and he was stellar. I mean, you notice him right away with that bright yellow Victor helmet on Friday, and it felt like a lot of top attackmen just stopped going at him because he was just beating them to death, and you know, really giving them giving them trouble around GLE. And you know, I think I've talked about guys fitting in well in the Big Ten, and Boland will definitely, you know, do that as he heads to Penn State, and really, you know, just. I would be shocked if he's not a starter or a big time contributor for that defense in Happy Valley.
So there's one thing that we neglected to mention when we talked about a couple of these guys. You reminded me of it when you mentioned Kenny Brower. Few guys that were originally on the tryout list that weren't able to attend. Brower being one. Colin Krieg, right, being another. And on top of that. Also worth noting that Connor Schellenberger, who is the number one recruit in the class of 2019, missed the age cutoff by 4 days, so was not able to try out as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, you know, important to look at. I think that there's probably this perception that if you miss the cutoff, that maybe you're reclassed or something. I'm not sure that's exactly the case, just because of, you know, these strict rules. I'm not exactly sure of the exact date. That is the deadline, the cutoff, you know, but certainly some fantastic players that, you know, weren't on that tryout list. And, you know, I mean, with that said, I think it definitely, you know, humbled for both of us to be able to be a part of that that selection process in the tryout list, not this time around, just kind of, you know, giving some votes on, you know, who should be invited to the first round of tryouts after, you know, a couple hundred players applied. So you know, it was pretty cool to be a part of that. And, you know, like I said, just feel very good about some of the names that we were able to see. And, you know, to add to that, I think, you know, Mitchell was not able to play, having just been diagnosed with mono and will miss some time. But I think, you know, I would understand if people were critical of the optics and would say, oh, you know, how can you put him in knowing that he wasn't there? But I think of all the years, and going back to that previous point about the midfield class, I think it's totally appropriate, you know, for Nick Myers's, you know, future Buckeye, you know, midfielder to be in the mix and be invited back, you know, once he starts to recover from mono, which isn't fun. But I think he's someone that could be a very pivotal part of this U19 team if he makes the cut after this next round.
So the last position to quickly talk about are goalies. This was a really tough event, in my opinion, to evaluate goalies at because you basically had about 12 and a half minutes and then a rotation, another 12 and a half minutes. So a handful of goalies didn't seem a lot of action in the session that I was at. But one guy who I thought had a really strong day was Liam Entenmann, rising freshman heading to Notre Dame from Chaminade, and has been one of my favorite goalies in this class for quite a while.
Yeah, I think with Entenmann, you know, I did feel at times underwhelmed, but then you see him in drills and you see how, you know, fiery and passionate he is, which I think I've written about a couple times before in evaluations of him. And, you know, hearing a lot about him from Sunday, it sounds like, I mean, he was on a different level from every other goalie. And, you know, I think you try and, you know, catch yourself saying, you know, oh my God, you know, make a save, you know, how, you know, I felt like he was struggling sometimes, but then you kind of saw what he could do, and it felt like the position that would be the toughest to pick. But, you know, a big kid with really quick hands, I saw him make some of the most unbelievable saves that I saw all spring, you know, but heard some mixed reviews about him at the event, you know, coming away from it, but really just solidified you know, his status on that top 50 list. And I think that, you know, he will really push Matt Schmidt hard at Notre Dame and, you know, will be a good guy to potentially, you know, make that next list. But I like this goalie group. I think, you know, I may say that it was perhaps the weakest position of them all. And I think on the flip side, I was, you know, having not talked about, you know, faceoff guys as well, I thought that was maybe the easiest position to pick based on the sessions that I saw or we saw. But goalie, I thought, was the hardest. And that's where I think, just with it being a unique position relative to field players, I think that the later sessions were really, you know, telling, you know, for these evaluators and coaches, you know, down the stretch.
So mentioning the faceoff guys, I thought that there was essentially two different, like, versions, so to speak. So I thought that Jake Naso and Connor Calderon were awesome. But I think they're similar in the sense that they're pretty small and really quick and fast. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I thought Alex Tsitsakis was really, really good as well. And so those were three of the guys that got through to the next 50. And it'll be fascinating to see, number one, do they carry one or two? I would suspect that they'll carry two. And if so, will they go for a stylistic difference that includes Tsitsakis and one of the fast guys? Or would they say, you know, we're just going to go with the two best guys or however else they would evaluate it? What did you take away from the faceoff position where we should mention that Angelo Petrakis did not attend due to injury as well?
Yeah, I think that I was definitely, you know, maybe most impressed with Calderon on Friday evening. And, you know, got to watch him in the spring live against Ward Melville for Smithtown West. And I think he maybe lost one faceoff total and, you know, was just ridiculous. And he kind of, you know, carried over the momentum from the spring that he had for the Bulls and was just remarkable. I mean, I think, you know, there's definitely that stylistic difference between him and a guy like Tsitsakis or a bigger faceoff guys, you know, but he was just absurd, you know, popping it forward and really just it felt like he was ahead of the whistle, but he wasn't, you know. I mean, I don't know if I saw him, you know, get called for more than, you know, one or two violations. I mean, his hands and his anticipation of the whistle, you know, was kind of on a different level. And same with Naso. I think Jake Naso made a big statement. And you and I have talked about him at length. And just because he is on the smaller side, I think Calderon is small as well, but a bit of a bigger, more stout frame. Not nearly anywhere close to Tsitsakis, but, you know, Calderon and a guy like Angelo Petrakis, we have in the Under Armour game, but will not be able to compete, you know, all kind of have a pretty, you know, sturdy frame, while Naso is a little bit skinny. I think he needs to put on some weight before he heads to Virginia, but was lights out as well. I think that it'll be really, really interesting to attend those tryouts in a few weeks, the second round, and see what they do with the face-off position, because I think they'd be wise to take a guy like Tsitsakis and then either Calderon or Naso. You know, yeah, really impressed with all, you know, all three of those guys. And then Drew Elder was thrown in as well, an Ohio State recruit from North Carolina. So a very good group there, and really curious to see what they do at the next tryouts. And also, I think that, you know, of course, they go from 50 to 30. I mean, I would expect maybe, depending on those tryouts go leading up to it, I would expect maybe to take three guys and kind of let them battle it out and see, you know, who's earned that spot. But they'd be silly not to take two guys, you know, not just one, because it's a grind. I mean, you're over in Ireland playing a lot of games in a short time, you know, got to carry two.
I would agree that I suspect coming away from the next round of tryouts, which is in July, that they will carry three faceoff guys, at least coming away from that, because of the injury risk to that position and because of the way that, or on the basis of the way that they've operated in the past. So keep an eye out to InsideLacrosse.com for player evaluations coming away from this past weekend, and keep an eye out for more coverage of the next round of U.S. U19 tryouts. But Ty, before we go, we got to briefly revisit Inside Lacrosse Invitational June session, where we crowned four champions In the 2022 division, 3D Pacific. In the 23 division, Team Unreal out of Minnesota. And then at Homewood Field, streaming on ESPN3, first we saw South Star come away with an overtime victory in the 2020 division. And in the 2021 division, the Richmond Hawks rode a incredible face-off advantage thanks to Charlie Martin and Chase Mullins to a victory over the West Coast Stars. Any thoughts on the ILRI as we've got the first session in the books?
Yeah, I think, I was really pleased really pleased with the 2021 division that I know, you and I both focused a lot of our efforts on, watching these rising juniors. And I think just the blue teams in particular, I think there's a number of players that I see, being some pretty coveted recruits. I mean, it starts with Chase Mullins, who I think you'd probably make the argument that is probably the most coveted recruit of anybody that was at the event in the 2021 division. I think he missed the first day and then came back and just crushed it, kind of trading, taking turns with Martin. Mullins, just a really physical, big, stout, face-off guy who won it forward, won the ball to himself and set up his team with a lot of possessions, a lot of extra possessions. I think those are the two main ones. And a guy like Gaines Weiss, with shorts like D'Amidi from St. Christopher is actually where Mullins will be transferring to, also caught my eye. I loved what number 18 Weiss could do as a D'Amidi going from defense to offense, just legging it constantly. And then a guy like Carter Foy, Pierre Reeves, almost just too many, names to Owen Falsuka. I mean, just a lot of really good offensive prospects, for the Hawks. And the West Coast Stars, I thought the defense was pretty strong. Some kids that caught my eye, certainly Duke Reeder and Aiden Tang, Cam Reith. I liked that unit a whole lot. And then on tack, guys like Shane Dannon and Nick Pollock scored a lot of goals throughout. Same with Jake Griffin at midfield, among others.
So I mentioned that the South Star team out of Texas came away champions in the 2020 division, particularly impressed by Marquez White, a midfielder heading to Princeton, as well as Bryce Walker, an attackman who made a name for himself. They took care of business against the LI Sting Gold, who were led by the Donneries, Dylan, an attackman, and Ryan, a midfielder. And in one of the most dramatic games of the entire tournament, the LI Sting Gold beat the LI Sting Black in the semifinals, and that was another group that included some really sought-after players in attackman Carson Cool and attackman Carter Page. That game was sent to overtime by Cool with 1 second left after a full field pass. That was pretty remarkable. One other guy who I want to mention that made a really strong impression in both the 2021 showcase game as well as throughout the tournament and the week was South Star defenseman Deuce Smoot. Keep an eye on him as he looks to make his college decision. But Ty, it wasn't just the U19s and the Inside Lacrosse Invitational this week. You were also in attendance at Crab Feast, and certainly as you're on the road to Maverick and the Under Armour Underclass event, as well as the Senior All-Star Game. Beyond that, so much going on the recruiting trail. As we get ready to say goodbye, any parting thoughts?
I think to start, it's definitely been a grind of the last couple of days, kind of, balancing the Elite 120 to Hopkins, seeing a ton of the top rising juniors, and then Crab Feast, U19s, and now at the Showtime, and then Under Armour. Probably my favorite 10 days of the year, just looking forward to kind of seeing the talent at Showtime, because, I do feel like, in a sense, relative to past years, the talent has been a little bit down, and it's still been really, really good at Showtime in the rising junior division. But I think since the legislation, kind of took place in April 2017, there weren't as many, can't miss talents, but a lot of kids that were in our rankings. But I just feel like that's going to change. And I think that a lot of the top 2021s will be here, and I can't wait. I mean, it's just, I think it's certainly the best individual showcase in the country and, event that I really enjoy covering every year at Western Connecticut State, with Paul Carcaterra and his staff of Mike Springer and Joe Seglia. So fired up to get to Danbury. I think we're about an hour out Dan and I are, and then gonna head home late Wednesday night, get a little rest, get some writing done, and hit the fields at Under Armour, and that's probably my favorite event by a good margin in terms of just really having some things that you determine. I know I mentioned U19s, but between those two, you really can't beat it in terms of the compete level and the amount of talent that will be out there on the field at Meadowood and St. Paul's schools, my old stomping ground. So looking forward to that period is coming. So we're close to that. I'm looking forward to getting away for a couple of days and taking a breather. I know a lot of college coaches do the same thing and then, you know, get back after it. But, the summer is flying by and, pumped for what's ahead.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of the IL Preps podcast. Apologize for any audio issues. Certainly, it's what happens when you try to record from the road. But we appreciate everybody taking the time to give it a listen. We hope you enjoy what you heard. If you did, tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and we'll be back. I don't know. Once again, I'm not going to make promise on exactly when, but to Ty's point, there's a lot going on. There's a lot we got to keep you up to speed on. So we'll be back when we can to fill you in on what happens between now and then.
And I'm glad that my voice cracked on the final word that I said in the podcast.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.